Welcome to this month's episode of the Las Vegas Weekly Second Helping Podcast. I'm Jen Levy, and I'm here with Leslie and Barack, and we want to thank you for listening to our show. When we're not writing about restaurants and the local food scene for the magazine, we're planning the next episode of Second Helping, and you can follow along by subscribing on YouTube and Apple Podcasts. We're coming to you a little later than usual this month because we've been taking some time off during the summer. Brock, you just did a pretty big road trip. Did you have any fun vacation food experiences?
You know I did. I drove to, we packed up the car and drove to Loveland, Colorado to visit some family and finally get out of this crazy summer heat, which was awesome. We usually do this trip at least once a year, and it had been a little bit longer this time, so it was really nice. It was just really nice to be, it sounds crazy, but it was just nice to be in the car for like 12 hours because it wasn't sitting in my house. So that was nice. But we drive through Utah to get there, and one of my rituals on this trip is to stop in Utah at Taco Time. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Taco Time. It's a fast food franchise. I think it originated in Oregon, where I'm from. Me and my brothers and my sister used to eat these. You know, they're probably not very good, but we love them. They're these little crispy fried burritos. They're really thin, and they're probably terrible for you. But they happen to be the perfect food to eat while you're driving, because they're just, you can one-hand them and just crunch them down, no problem. I think I probably had more Taco Time burritos than I should have had on this trip. But that was good. And then when we got to Loveland, we spent a lot of time wandering around downtown in this little town about an hour outside of Denver in the foothills in Colorado. Very pretty place. And the downtown has been kind of renovated and upgraded over the last few years. And they've got some really cool breweries there. So we spent a lot of time on the patio. Loveland Ale Works was my favorite, but there's a couple other ones. There's one called Crow Hop, and there's another called Verboten. And it was a pretty great way during a pandemic to sit around and relax and drink some really good local beer. So I had a great vacation, and I'm looking forward to going back soon. Next time you're in Loveland, Colorado, check out their beer. I highly recommend it. Leslie, you got out and did some stuff too. Did you eat some camping food, or what did you do?
Yeah, I mean, my camping food consists of kind of the same things every time, which is veggie hot dogs, veggie hamburgers, and some side. Like, we had rice-a-roni this time, which was a treat, a San Francisco treat. So I was in Grand Canyon last week, and we stopped in Flagstaff on our way back. And I had never been. I am in love with Flagstaff. So there's three places in Flagstaff that I want to shout out. And that's Martin's Breakfast Palace, which sounds like the least Mexican thing like ever. But it's a Mexican restaurant with they call themselves the house that Chilaquiles built. And I didn't have the Chilaquiles, but their food was so good. Again, I kept it vegetarian while I ate there, but they are also known for their, pork chile verde. I was tempted. So that was really awesome. And then I ate dinner at a place called Criollo, probably butchering the name, but it's a Latin kitchen. And that was, it was so nice. It's like, I don't know, it felt like date night, you know, just a little bit more upscale. We had a tamale that was on special. That was so good. Super spicy. What else did I have there? A salmon tostada. Salmon, it's one of my favorite fishes, but it kind of always tastes the same. And this was probably one of my like top three favorite salmon dishes of all time. And lastly, there's this place called the Toasted Owl Cafe, and I just got a drink there, but they were catering pizza from across the street, And I highly recommend going to the Toasted Owl, getting a drink, and then ordering pizza from the place across the street. You can just like post up all afternoon and make a day out of it. So
I'm jealous.
Yeah, it was really fun.
That's fun.
It's pretty safe to say that Arizona has better Mexican food than Taco Time in Utah. That's probably.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Brock, is Taco Time related to the Taco John's in any way? Because it looks like, I looked it up while you were talking about it.
I think it's pretty similar. Yeah. I mean, it's just like a Taco Bell or anything else, you know?
Right. I know they have the little hash brown circles.
Yes. Like, I mean, they're tater tots.
Oh,
call them what they are.
I've been to Taco John in South Dakota. That was the first time I'd ever come across a Taco John. And you find them there everywhere, in gas stations, everywhere. They do have the little tater tot things that are so good.
What about you, Genevieve? Have you eaten anywhere?
Like you, I've done some camping this summer. It seems to be the most... The safest form of, you know, being outside right now. I've just basically done camp food, and I always love to stop at little, you know, little coffee huts along the way, like in, you know, off the way places. One of the things I found in Utah, speaking of, this is my favorite place to go camping in Southern Utah. It's close. It's, you know, you never really drive for more than 3 or 4 hours, and temperatures are 20 degrees cooler. So I love camping in Southern Utah, but you always find these little things. Like I found this little hut that had this kolaches, and I don't know if you guys have ever had a kolache. Mm-hmm. I had an apple kolache that was so good. And when I got home, I immediately looked up a recipe and made some myself.
Oh my God.
Of course you did. Of course.
Yeah.
I was like, the first time, I've only had kolaches once, and that was in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
My in-laws live in South Dakota, and I didn't know anything about them. And I had it one time, and I'd forgotten about it until this camping trip to Utah, and I had one. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go home and make this. So I did.
Nice. Really did it turn out as good?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
So the unexpected upside to the pandemic and grocery shopping is that little by little, it's been connecting me to my dad and that side of the family. Since normally I visit them once a year, and now it's been 2 years since I've seen them, so I'm starting to miss them a lot. And I was making this Brazilian seafood stew called moqueca, and I needed some ingredients from Cardenas. And obviously, moqueca is not Honduran, but going to Cardenas and kind of just immersing myself in, in that experience, I found made me feel closer to home and made me feel closer to my dad and the Honduran side of my family. So I started thinking, what are the places that we either grew up with going to, grocery stores that we go to or frequent that tie us back to home in some way? So in this case, even though I didn't grow up with my dad, Cardenas is one of those spots that kind of serves as a bridge, so to speak. Do you guys have anything like that?
Oh, I definitely do. In fact, it's less than 2 miles from where I live now. There's a seafood city. For those of you who don't know what Seafood City is, it's basically a giant Asian supermarket, but specifically it's a Filipino supermarket. They have fresh fish and, you know, all kinds of seafood. But the coolest thing for me about going there is it's got like all these snacks that I used to eat when I was a little kid. I grew up in the Philippines, and I never see these snacks unless I'm in the Philippines, but now they're like all here. In fact, when I first came to America, my relatives would send me packages or whatever for, like, you know, with these snacks. And now I tell them, you don't need to send me anything, or, you know, because I can get them literally 2 miles from where I live. And everything there is just, you know, it reminds me so much of my childhood, from all these little corn chips that I used to eat at the movies when I was growing up. They have, you know, this papaya soap that my mom used her entire life. And all these, like, I don't cook a lot of Filipino food, but there are all these ingredients that you'll find there that you need for making Filipino food, like egg roll wrappers or like this shrimp paste, which, you know, you need for like certain dishes, which, you know, I don't make it, so I don't ever buy it. Mm-hmm. But if I ever like one day, like you, Leslie, like, you know, feel like I'm missing home and I want to make a certain dish, I would definitely go to Seafood City and buy the ingredients.
Definitely. Yeah. Going to a place like, you know, in my case, Cardenas, I feel like when I'm there, I don't know what like half of the ingredients are, but I've seen them in my dad's house and I've seen, you know, his wife, my stepmom, cooking with them. And I think in the past, I was always too nervous to kind of wedge myself into the kitchen and be like, oh, hey, what are you cooking? What are you doing? What are you using? I remember the first time I saw my stepmom use a blender to make, you know, like a salsa sauce to go to like marinate meats and things like that. And, you know, I grew up the white side of my family, never used a blender to make a sauce in their life. And I was like, what is this? I'm confused. And then here I am now using a blender to make a lot of these sauces and to like boil, you know, the dried peppers before I make a stew or, you know, whatever. And it's just funny to see how like I feel like my mind is so much more open now that when I do cook something like moqueca and I talk to my dad about it, we now have this conversation where we're going back and forth talking about, oh, well, next time you should make a shrimp soup and you should do this and you should do that. And he'll like actually give me suggestions and ingredients to go get next time. So even though I don't live there and I didn't grow up in it, it's like the secondhand immersion, so to speak. And even though my dad and I can't share the food together, we're still sharing our culture over the phone, and it's all connected through food. And all because I went to this market that reminded me of my dad. So it's this really weird kind of experience, secondhand experience.
That's really cool. And it's funny that you talk about salsa, because I have a big salsa connection to that same store. I grew up eating the salsa that my dad made. He was the GM of a Mexican restaurant when we lived in Oregon. And, my wife, Maria, her mother was born in Mexico, and she grew up having a very different salsa that was made from scratch with a lot of fresh vegetables, tomatoes and onions and chili peppers that her mom would roast at home, which I now know and definitely prefer. Like, that is the way that you make a great salsa. But I had never done that before until my wife made it for me the first time. And now we make that all the time. And when it's salsa time, that's the store that I go to, Cardenas, because the produce section is so huge and great, and they have everything, and it's really cheap.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's so good stuff.
Affordable.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And there's dried chilies and fresh chilies and things there that I haven't found at any other store in Las Vegas. So it's a must.
I think it's also interesting, like, that style of cuisine, like I said, it seemed so foreign to me because I had never cooked that way. But then as soon as I made like an entry dish and, you know, like I said, I used dried chilies in something, or I used fresh peppers in something, and like learned kind of the basics, I was like, oh my God, this is just a whole other style of cooking, and it's no harder than anything else. And it's so flavorful. So I love having that in my repertoire now. It's really like changed things up in a great way.
Is there a single ingredient that you have kind of discovered that you never used before that's kind of hard to find? You know, you have to go to a specialty market to get.
Yeah.
It's kind of become one of your favorites now.
So I know you don't have to go to a specialty market to get it. And this is kind of funny because it all happened right around the same time of like Trump touting Goya. Oh my God, don't even get me started. But prior to all of that, Goya, again, was one of those things that I never grew up with, but was always in my dad's house. And I was wandering around Cardenas looking for chicken stock when I went through the aisles probably 15 times. And I was like, it's got to be here. But it was Goya or Maggie. I think there are some other brands. And I will say I won't buy Goya? I probably won't buy Goya ever again. But just those kinds of seasonings in general, like the Maggie chicken seasoning, there is one in particular that I really like from Goya. It has like coriander and annatto. And that one, I love it. It's so, so, so good. If you just put a packet of that, like half a packet in some rice, oh my God. I don't really eat a lot of rice because I can never season it well. But with like some Goya or Maggie, it's just amazing. And then, yeah, the dried chilies. I feel like they add so much depth to whatever you're making. Okay, like here's an example. I made pozole. This was a while ago, like in November. I made pozole. And all of the recipes that you found in like Epicurious or like, you know, Bon Appetit were like calling for, you know, nothing authentic. But then if you looked on YouTube and found like real authentic recipes, they were all calling for dried chilies, which wasn't in a single recipe from like a magazine. And it's so simple. Like all you do is boil them until they're soft and then blend them. Like that's it. So yeah, that's my thing.
How about you, Genevieve? Have you discovered any ingredients at Seafood City or any other place that you've been shopping at lately that have become new staples for you?
Yeah, so you can probably find this in any Asian market too, but shrimp paste is really like gross. Like, if you like smell it, it smells bad, but it's so tasty in like certain things. We used to have this joke where like if you were in a Filipino home, yeah, you always had shrimp paste in your fridge. And if you when white people come over, you hide it because it's so sweet. That was like our old joke, like, you know, in my family. But yeah, it is so stinky, but it's so delicious. And I do have a little jar of it in my fridge. I hardly ever use it, but like when I'm eating something that maybe, you know, my sister made, like, I'm not great with cooking Filipino food, but it definitely is a staple that I put in my fridge. It's very stinky. So it's almost like radioactive when you open it. It's like, I'm used to it because I grew up with it, but I can see how it can be super off-putting to other people.
It adds so much to whatever you're making.
And you just need such a small amount of it, like just tiny, like it's so salty, but it gives such depth of flavor. And if you're not afraid to like open the jar and like add it to your cooking, it will really add a new dimension to your cooking.
Yeah. What do you add it to?
So you can add it to stews. It's really good, like any fish, like kind of dish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like just random things that needs a little bit of like saltiness or brininess to it. It works really well.
Well, when it comes to specialty ingredients and products that you can't find all over town, the restaurant that comes to my mind first is Forte, which just celebrated its 11-year anniversary in Las Vegas this week. When Forte first opened, they really brought Bulgarian cuisine and other Eastern European and other European specialty dishes and ingredients to the local food scene, stuff that we didn't really have before. The owner, Nina Manchev, and her family have gone a long way in really educating Las Vegans about this food and this culture. Forte isn't just a great restaurant. They've been selling some of these products that they import from other countries longer than the restaurant's even been in business. Nina's parents started out distributing specialty spirits and then moved into charcuterie and eventually moved into caviar. And all of this development has gone alongside the growth of Forte. It's a really special place. I checked in with Nina recently to see how things are going over there at Forte on Rainbow and Flamingo, as well as to talk about all the different things that they've been doing lately, such as their online cooking classes and live cooking demos that she's been doing, sharing these recipes with her customers so that you can make stuff at home. Of course, you gotta hit Forte to get the right ingredients to make that happen. But we also talked about kind of the evolution of the restaurant over the years and some of her favorite dishes and favorite ingredients.
First off, how are things at Forte these days?
You know, they're good. It's just a different it's a different world. You know, we had to shut down and switch over to delivery and takeout, which was never really our thing. So that's why I started doing the cooking classes, because I'm like, you know, the whole purpose for me is I still want to be able to connect with the customers. And if, you know, if they're not sitting at Forte having, you know, the Forte experience, maybe they can recreate it at home. So that was really good. And we're continuing them forward. And we opened up and people are coming back. We're getting a lot of new people, which is nice. And, you know, my team's working really well. So we're happy. It's just nice to have people back in and see some faces.
Tell me a little bit more about the live cooking things that you're doing monthly now and some of the other online stuff that you've been doing to stay connected to your customers.
I think it was like a day after the shutdown. I'm like, you know what? I've always wanted to do these cooking classes, and a lot of people that come into Forte ask for some of the different recipes, and I just never really had time to get organized enough to be able to facilitate that. And so we started the first class, and I think I sold like 8 tickets, and then, you know, one of our classes got up to like almost 200 tickets. People would pick up kits every Saturday, and then Sunday we would cook the different dishes together live. And after, you know, things were able to reopen, you know, everybody kind of just goes back to their regular lives. So it's very ambitious to do it every week. So we're doing them once a month, and we're making them more special. And the guys that come and help film are great about it too. And this last one that we did last Sunday, we actually had people inside of Forte cooking as well. So we were doing the live on YouTube Live while people were cooking paella with us at Forte. And we did like a wine tasting. My executive chef went up and taught people how to make the paella because he's like super amazing at it. So that was really fun.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun. Forte's always been a really unique part of the Vegas restaurant scene. And you've really introduced different dishes and styles of cooking to the local community that Las Vegas really didn't have before. When did you feel like people really embraced the cuisine there and that maybe you didn't have to educate diners as much about what you were trying to do at Forte?
You know, to be honest, I think people really started actually embracing it when we were on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. So when that show aired, you know, instead of people coming in and being confused or like a little bit uncertain of why we have Spanish food and Bulgarian and all these different cultures and even what Bulgarian food is, if it's, you know, the meat and potatoes and heavy and, you know, whatever stigma they had about it. After that show aired, people were coming in, not just from Vegas, but from the United States. And they're like, I want the clay pot. I want the Bulgarian mixed grill, you know, asking for these things by name. And, you know, over the last couple of years, people are getting more and more open and more curious. So even with the cooking classes, that's what it is. We're cooking Bulgarian. I made a joke one time. I'm like, by the end of quarantine, like, you guys can just start working here. And most people coming back, you guys will know more about the dishes that we make here than probably the staff, because it's just, they're learning, they're making it, they're seeing everything, all these different ingredients, and it's not so intimidating.
You've also been working in distribution and with specialty foods for a few years now. How has that part of your business changed over time?
Well, my parents, that's what my parents have done for, you know, most of their time here. They started doing distribution like in 2004 with some unique spirits, and they brought in a lot of really cool spirits to Vegas and the United States, and then expanded over into, you know, the line of charcuterie that we do, and the Bulgarian charcuterie, and then the caviar. So I really like the distribution end, and, you know, what we're focusing more on now is the caviar and these like fine food products. And for me, it's so much fun because you get to develop something and you get to bring it out into the hands of people that can turn it into something else. So I think that's really special, and also introduce customers to things that they wouldn't have seen before. So I like that. I like seeing how people react to different products and what these different chefs and businesses are able to do with the different things that we're able to bring to the market.
I think just the general food curiosity of people in Las Vegas has grown a lot over basically the same kind of time span that you guys have been operating in Las Vegas. Like, there's so many more specialty stores around town, and there's just a lot more interest in, you know, finding different ingredients, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I opened Forte, it was kind of this wave of all the chain restaurants coming into town. So people were more used to that, and they were open, but they weren't as open as they are now. So I've also definitely seen that shift where people are curious and they want to try these different things, and they want to try, go locally to these amazing places where the chefs used to work on the strip, and there's more creativity, and I think it's really great because it's becoming like all the other foodie cities in the United States. And it's not just like, oh, you know, I've, you know, when people come into Forte, they're like, oh, this place would be really great in New York or Portland or, you know, those types of cities. But I think now it's the reverse, where it's no, people aren't comparing it to other cities. Like, Vegas is standing on its own in the culinary scene.
I'm sure that it's a lot of fun for you too to continue to educate yourself and hunt down different specialty items. Is there a particular item or an ingredient that you're sort of obsessed with right now?
I mean, honest, like I'm obsessed with our caviar, and I, you know, during when we had the lockdown, I'm like, you know what, I don't want to push this product too much because I want to be sensitive to people's budgets, but we got a really positive response about it, and people were enjoying like indulging in this product that we bring in. And my goal with that is to kind of demystify caviar and demystify the whole experience, because a lot of people are just used to going to a really fancy restaurant and, you know, just it's for special occasions. But after this, like, I think a lot of people realize that you have to value any occasion that you can and create those special experiences for yourself. So that's my goal, is, you know, making it more approachable and showing people the different ways that you can enjoy it. And yeah, so I mean, that's my big time obsession right now. Mm-hmm.
I agree completely. I think one of the things that we've learned over this last few months is that those indulgences that we used to take advantage of for special occasions are even more important now, right? Like to be able to, you know, still eat our favorite foods, whether it's caviar or potato chips or caviar with potato chips. That's always good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, but I've always really liked bringing those kinds of experiences together. And it's, you know, you're taking something that's right now on the menu, we have a dish called Tutmanik, and it's the Bulgarian style, like pull apart bread. But the flavors are so rich and decadent, but still mild, that when you put a little caviar on it, it's mind blowing, because you're taking something that's like, it's just, you know, it's nothing that special, but it is. And it's something like peasant food. And you don't need to spend a lot of money to create this dish. And then you're pairing it with something that is, you know, a little bit more of a luxury item. So kind of less traditional type of combinations. And I always like seeing those combinations at other restaurants too, where you just have like the bread and butter, and then you have this like magnificent, you know, like foie gras or whatever it is paired with it. I know one dish I really liked before, and I haven't been there in a long time, but was at Sage, and they had the foie gras creme brulee. Mm-hmm. And they served it with, I think, with toast. But for me, that was so enjoyable because it's like you're picking at this, you know, really rich, decadent dish, but it's still like so simple that it makes it beautiful to me.
We're talking a lot on this episode about, you know, hunting down ingredients and items at specialty markets so that we can cook some dishes that are, you know, personal to us in one way or another. Is there a dish on the menu at Forte that is extremely personal to you, maybe a family recipe or something you grew up with that sort of tells your food story in a way?
Ooh, I mean, it's so many of them because, you know, my food story has always been not just sitting down and eating just to, you know, eat. It's a combination of so many different things, and it's sitting at a table with family and friends and talking about your day and talking about what you want to do. And it's always centered around many dishes. So it's like if you sit down at a, you know, traditional dinner with us, it's, you know, you get the shepska salad, and then you get, you know, mixed grill, and you get some sort of bread, and you get all these different flavors that come together, and it's enjoyable. And you pair that with your friends and some good beverages, and that's the experience. So it's a combination of different dishes for me, for sure.
Well, the cool part is that we can go get those dishes at Forte and take them home and have a feast at home if we want to, if we're not eating at restaurants right now. So appreciate
Absolutely.
That we can do that still.
And you know what? That's what we created here. So a lot of people, if you eat the shepska salad and it has the feta cheese, you can buy it at the bodega that's inside of Forte. If you like the different sausages and you want to just take, you know, we have our own blend of meat and seasonings. We can just give you the raw ingredients and you can grill them at home. So, or you can buy, you know, recreate the kits at any time. So you can come in, have your food, and then we can get all these ingredients for you to take home and do in your downtime.
Okay. It's time to do the best things we ate this last month, which apparently incorporates all of July and half of August since we've been on vacation. I'm actually going to go first because the best thing that I ate was something that I made myself, two different things actually that have nothing to do with each other other than I made them in the same cast iron pan. I usually only bust out this big, it was a wedding present, I think. It's an Emeril Lagasse giant cast iron pan. I don't think I used it for the first 5 years that I owned it. But then when I did start using it, it was always in use. And I do steaks in it. That's the main thing. I'll sear a steak on both sides and then finish it in the oven. So I wanted to do that, but it was too hot, of course, too hot to cook. So I took the thing outside and I did that on my grill. I have a little side burner, so I seared them in there. I turned the inside of the grill on so it was like an oven. I finished the steak in there, and I put like some red onion in there, big thick slices of red onion and like whole carrots, just threw them in there, and it was awesome. And I was like, how am I not been making steaks like this my whole life? This is great. I may have been swimming and drinking too many beers while I was cooking. Chapter two was that I made my first cast iron pizza about a week ago. Yeah. Really just used it like any other pizza pan. It's a little bit smaller than the pan that I normally use, so the crust ended up being a little bit more thick, which is okay. But it did get a very different kind of crunchy crispiness on the bottom, so I think that was because that I used that pan and that I heated the pan before I put the dough in it a little bit and put a little extra olive oil in there, and it was pretty good. I think I'm going to start doing that from now on, cast iron pizza.
That sounds so good. If we ever are working in an office again, you have to bring some in. I want to try it.
I'll do it. I'll start a cast iron pizza business on the side.
Yes.
How about you, Leslie? What's the best thing you ate this month?
I actually went to Lupo at Mandalay Bay last night. It's Wolfgang Puck's Italian restaurant there. And I have walked by Lupo probably 100 times and never eaten there. And I haven't been going out to the strip very much. I haven't, like, really the only place I've been going is on my camping trips. But I have family in town, so we decided to go out. And I didn't know what to expect. I like all of Wolfgang Puck's restaurants that I've been to, but Lupo, to be fair, doesn't get that high of ratings on, like, Yelp and stuff like that. I think this is a great example of when to not trust Yelp, because it was great. And everything that we got was just, you know, really, really delicious. The ossobuco was probably my favorite thing. I love ossobuco. Just super tender. The polenta that it was served with was just, like, so cheesy and decadent and creamy. And then there was also an appetizer. It was like this wood-fired shrimp served in this broth. And honestly, the shrimp was kind of whatever, but the broth, holy cow. I could just, like, take home that broth and have it, like, drink it for, like, a week. And they serve it with this garlic butter toast, kind of like pizza dough almost. And so, you know, mopping up all of that broth and sauce with that garlic toast was just money. So, yeah, Lupo, that was my favorite thing I've eaten.
That sounds really good. Yeah, I think that's definitely, like, the least celebrated of Wolfgang Puck's Las Vegas restaurants. It's not the oldest. It's not the newest.
Right.
Everybody knows it. You can't go to Mandalay Bay and not walk past it, but sounds good.
Yeah, it was delicious.
How about you, Genevieve?
The best thing I ate this month is going with our earlier discussion of family recipes. One of my short camping trips was actually at a family get together in California last weekend, where I camped in my cousin's backyard to follow social distancing. But we had a little party for my uncle, or two uncles who were retiring. And a Filipino party is not complete without a giant pig roast. We order a whole pig from somewhere, and every Filipino house has a long table that can accommodate a whole pig. And all the other, like, food is kind of sides. And you have the centerpiece. And this is, like, every family party. So we had a pig roast, or we call it lechon. And I'm not a big pork eater, but I do enjoy having just little bites of it. And during this, like, little get together in family, you know, this has been a project that I've been wanting to do for a long time. And I think I've mentioned on this podcast before that I come from a family of amazing cooks. And my mother was sort of like the matriarch of this structure. And my mother kept this recipe book that has now been passed down to cousins and things like that. During this party, a lot of dishes that cousins make are from, you know, these recipes that my mother has had for a long time from other family members before her. My big project during this pandemic is actually putting together all these recipes and printing them as a book and giving it to everybody in my family, so that all the sort of next generation kids have them. Even though, like myself, I don't really cook these recipes, I think it's just nice to have them. Because when we get together, I get to eat them. And I get together with family probably, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. So that's when I eat all, you know, all these amazing food that they cook. And so that was the best thing I ate this month. It was just like a weekend of, like, you know, delicious desserts and, you know, just tons and tons of noodles and pork dishes and shrimp dishes. And it was just delicious. So that was my big project that I came to this last get together. I'm like, I'm going to put together all these recipes so that everybody can have it and pass it down through the next generation.
That sounds awesome. What could be better than still being able to see family and cook this food that you guys have shared for years and years, even in these crazy times? That sounds great.
That's a wrap for this August episode of Second Helping. We hope you enjoyed listening. You can find past episodes of our show at lasvegasweekly.com/podcasts. And if you don't mind, head over to YouTube and subscribe to the Las Vegas Weekly channel. You can listen there as well. And you can do the same, plus give us a rating and review if you like. at Apple Podcasts. Very special thanks to Nina Manchev and Forte for sharing time with us this month. You can make a reservation to dine at Forte or order some food to go or catch up with the Cooking with Nina classes, which I highly recommend, all at barforte.com. And thanks as always to the amazing Sonia Barcelona, who provides our theme music with her song Violent Water. Go check out the video for her new song, Heart Station, right now at artofsonia.com. Please come back in September when we might be bringing you a second helping of Vegas donuts. That's going to be fun. Thanks again for listening. See you soon.